Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of T1 Talks. This is a podcast where we aim to share our experiences living with type 1 diabetes to build a sense of community for diabetics, both type 1 and 2. We want to dispel any myths about what it means to be a type 1 and increase diabetic awareness through our stories. I'm Gianna, a type 1 diabetic of 14 years and a recent graduate of the College of New Jersey.
And I'm Victoria. I'm a medical student from Saskatchewan, Canada, and I'm newly diagnosed with type 1 diabetes about 4 months ago.
So over the past week, we've been working on putting together a list of diabetic myths for you guys. We took some from online. We took some that we've lived through. I know that someone submitted one to us on our Instagram. You're definitely going to want to sit down, get comfortable, grab a snack, because this is a long one, but 100% one of the most important ones.
We love it when you guys reach out to us on Insta. And some of these are such commonly held beliefs that they sort of feel like common sense when you hear them. But there are a lot that are wrong, pretty much everyone that we're going to talk about today. And I know that this can be really frustrating for a lot of diabetics.
Oh yeah. Some of these myths I've been getting for years. Others I only hear once in a while. Some of the ones from online, though, really shocked me. I'm reading these and wondering, like, who put this information out into the world? I try my best not to get annoyed when someone brings up some kind of incorrect assumption about diabetes, because it's an opportunity to really break it down for someone, and it's one more person who will eventually have correct information to send on about diabetes. I want people to feel comfortable asking questions, talking about diabetes, being wrong. There's so much false information about diabetes out there that it's totally understandable to get it wrong. But we hope you go into this episode with an open mind, and maybe you'll learn something new.
Yeah, definitely. I think that having the conversation is so important, and just treating it like it's a question instead of an assumption. That's sort of where the problem of these myths come from, is when there's sort of stereotypes or these ideas or pictures in our head that we have of diabetics. And so far for me, I've been lucky. Everyone so far has been pretty understanding and curious about my diabetes, but I am sure that I'll earn some stories over the next few years. So I'll keep you posted. I think we have to start off with the biggest myth about diabetes, which is that it is caused by sugar. And it definitely is not caused by sugar. There are different types of diabetes, and each one has its own sort of unique cause, but none of them are sugar.
Yeah. For us as type 1s, our diabetes is stemming from the fact that our body's immune system is attacking our pancreas, leaving us without any insulin cells. This wasn't caused by something we ate, any amount of sugar, but it can be caused by a number of other outside figures. There's things like genetics or environmental factors that play into it. So whatever it is, it's outside of our control. And I think this is a great spot to talk about the myth that at T1DManArt brought to us on our Instagram, and that is that as a type 1 diabetic, our pancreas is completely dead. Now, if you go to my personal Instagram, you'll see that in my bio, I mentioned that I'm a member of the Broken Pancreas Club, and I've seen plenty of diabetic merch and gifts with this in the title. But the truth is, our pancreas is not dead. It has plenty of working capabilities.
It definitely does. Obviously, insulin is a really important thing that your pancreas produces, but your pancreas, the reason that you're alive right now is because your pancreas is actually working pretty darn good for all of the jobs that it's doing. So it plays a super big role in digestion and sort of helping absorption of nutrients and things like that. And when it gets inflamed or angry, it's not a good sign. And so type 1 diabetes, it is just like a very specific cell in the pancreas that gets attacked by our white blood cells. It's not sort of an overall pancreatic reaction. And I think that it's interesting that a type 1 diabetic, I hear about it fairly often, people saying like, oh, why can't I get a pancreas transplant? Because it sounds like a really good idea. But the problem is that when you get a transplant of any kind, you need anti-rejection meds, and these medications cause a lot of problems. And so you're actually sicker if you're on these medications than you are if you're just sort of a type 1 diabetic on insulin therapy. And it's not that being a type 1 diabetic is great. If you listen to our podcast, I think that you hear about a lot how it's not great, but it's just better than the alternative of sort of anti-rejection meds.
Yeah, I was actually one of those people for years that all I would tell people diabetes meant was that I had a dead pancreas. My pancreas doesn't work like yours does, and it's broken. And it wasn't until a couple of years ago that I started looking into it more, because I was constantly asking my parents, why can't I look into getting a pancreas transplant? If this is broken, don't we want to just fix it? Let's just replace it. Because, you know, it's totally that easy, right?
Another thing that goes along with pancreas transplants is that a lot of us type 1 diabetics will just destroy the new insulin producing cells in the new pancreas and end up a type 1 diabetic anyway. And this happens even in non-diabetics who get pancreas transplants. Those cells are just really tempting for our bodies to attack, it seems.
No escaping this one, guys.
Unlikely, unfortunately. And so now I guess I'll move on to our second myth. And that is that diabetes is just diabetes. And I know that there's some conversations that happen within the diabetic community, especially around the difference between type 1 diabetes and type 2 diabetes. There are actually a whole bunch of different types of diabetes, and we're not going to get into them all today in this podcast. But just know that when you hear somebody mention type 3 diabetes or type 1.5 diabetes, these are all things that exist. We're just not going to talk about them today.
Yeah, I know we only mentioned two types of diabetics in our intro, but we really support all diabetics. We're not the type to say we're type ones, we don't like this type or this type. We're all in the same community here.
Not at all. I think any diabetics have more in common than they have different. And so I think it's frequently seen where, you know, like you sort of get groups of people who have different ideas, but I do think that there's a way to bring everyone together because we all have to worry about our sugars first and foremost. And so I think that that's just a really uniting factor across every diabetic.
Of course. And I think the older I get, the more people seem to be aware that there's multiple types of diabetes that are out there, but I don't think they understand the differences between all of them. And I think this lack of understanding is what leads to the beginning of these potentially harmful stereotypes.
Totally. I'm going to get that a lot as time goes on because of how old I was when I was diagnosed, where people won't necessarily assume that I'm type 1, although with my insulin pump and Dexcom, it's pretty obvious. But a lot of type 2 diabetics use insulin too. So I think that the three types of diabetes that I want to touch on today are type 1 diabetes, type 2 diabetes, and then gestational diabetes. Gestational diabetes is specific to women who are pregnant. But besides that, type 1 and type 2 happen at any age, and they're both really genetically linked. The difference between them is that type 1 is sort of an autoimmune destruction of those insulin-producing cells, and it leads to an insulin deficiency. Insulin is super important because it's what gets our sugar into our cells for our cells to eat and use for energy. And when it can't do that, the sugar just builds up in our bloodstream and it makes us really sick. That's what high sugars do. And so in type 1, we have this sort of insulin deficiency. Now, when you look at, like, Gianna, your diabetes developed quicker than mine, and you probably lost those pancreatic beta cells really quickly. Versus me, it's a later onset and it's sort of a slower onset. And that means that I still have some insulin production happening. I still have some beta cell function, but it's just sort of going downhill quickly. And this is where you hear the type 1 versus type 1.5 diagnosis of diabetes, but they're both essentially the same. They're both treated like type 1 diabetes because it's the same process with the same result. It's just one is slower than the other. And as type 1 diabetics, we're definitely the minority in the diabetic community, which I think leads to some of the diabetic frustration that you hear from type 1s. I know it comes out of my mouth in clinic a lot. I'm like, is there a type 1 resource for this? I have to remind myself, we're a very small percentage of diabetics. 5 to 10% of diabetics are type 1. Type 2 diabetes is a little bit different. It still has high blood sugars, just like we do, but it's insulin resistance. So it means that even though the body is working fine to produce insulin, it's not responding to the insulin in the right way. And what this does is it means that the body produces lots of insulin, but the insulin can't work to get the sugar into the cells. And so you just have this high level of insulin and this high level of sugar. And so that's part of the test for diabetes when we're looking at what type it is we look at how much actual insulin is in your body right now. And then we see. So if you have really high levels of insulin with high sugars, you're more likely to be type 2. Whereas if you have lower levels of insulin with high sugars, you're more likely to be type 1. And the thing with type 2 diabetes is that it leads to insulin deficiency. So you start with insulin resistance, and then you end up with insulin deficiency because your pancreas gets tired. Those beta cells get tired of working so hard, and they just can't keep doing that. So what you end up with is you end up with people needing insulin eventually who are type 2 diabetics. So you'll hear, or I hear often, oh, type 2 diabetics never need insulin. And that's super not true. And I know that we've talked about that before in the podcast, but type 2 diabetics absolutely sometimes need insulin because at some point your pancreas is just no longer able to keep up with how much insulin it needs to make, and it sort of just gives up. Type 2 diabetics are by far the most common type of diabetic. And I think that now is a really good time to just touch on a few specific to type 2 myths. And that's like that type 2 diabetes is the kind that is preventable or that you can avoid, that it's sort of your fault, it's lifestyle choices and all of these things. And we're going to touch on this more later, but I think type 2 diabetes sort of gets a worse rep than type 1 just because of how it works.
Oh, definitely. I think that there's so much stigma that surrounds type 2 diabetes. And when I hear people say they're type 1, a lot of times they're proud to say that. When I hear people say type 2, there's often a lot of shame that's tied to that. And that comes from the fact that people are constantly blaming type 2 diabetics for their diabetes.
Yeah, like I think that there's a really good argument for why it's important to remember that just because something might be preventable in one way for one person, it's not preventable for everybody. And lastly, sort of leading from that, we're going to talk about gestational diabetes. And so this is diabetes that happens during pregnancy for women. And if you have gestational diabetes, there is an increased risk of type 2 diabetes in your future baby. And so that's sort of another factor that can play into type 2 diabetes being sort of not preventable 100%. But ultimately what happens in gestational diabetes is that we sort of produce these natural hormones that cause insulin resistance, but usually this self sort of regulates and your sugars don't go up too high. You're able to just sort of have slightly higher insulin resistance, which allows more sugar to go to the baby to help the baby grow while you're pregnant. So it makes sense why this happens, but sometimes it goes haywire and this causes diabetes to develop during pregnancy that will usually go away after pregnancy is done, almost always. And so what happens is we just treat it with insulin in medicine. Obviously not just, it's challenging, but we treat it with insulin and it's super preventable, or not preventable, it's treatable with insulin. And so we want to identify it as soon as we can, and then we monitor the pregnancy really closely. So I bring this up because every mom is going to remember the super yucky orange glucose drink that you had to drink when you were pregnant and have your blood taken. And the reason that we do this is because we want to make sure that you don't have gestational diabetes while you're pregnant, because we can treat it with insulin and that will stop your sugars from being high. It doesn't hurt the baby and it just keeps you from having sort of those ultimate consequences from having those high sugars during pregnancy. Gestational diabetes is really quite common. And so we test for it sort of quickly and we test you more than once. So a lot of moms have done it more than once. So I want to say also that if you have diabetes before you become pregnant, or if you end up with gestational diabetes, it doesn't guarantee that your baby's going to get diabetes. It doesn't guarantee that you're going to suffer any consequences. You can have a healthy kid, even if you're diabetic before pregnancy or during pregnancy.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty common myth that if you're diabetic, you're automatically going to have an unhealthy baby. That is not the case, as we just explained. Moving on to the next myth, this is another really common one, and that's that all diabetics are overweight.
And as a type 1 diabetic, I think we know that a lot of overweight type 1 presentations, especially in older people, are actually misdiagnosed as type 2 exactly for that reason, because we sort of have this association between being overweight and diabetes. But in reality, there's sort of this, I lost weight when I was diagnosed because I just wasn't able to use any of the sugars that I was eating. And so I was burning all this fat all the time. And it decreased my suspicion that I had something wrong with me because I was losing weight. And it didn't make sense to me that I would be developing diabetes while losing weight, even though that's actually more common.
Like I mentioned in a previous episode, someone once asked me if I had diabetes because I was fat. And over the years, I've heard so many jokes about overweight people and diabetes, or eating junk food and diabetes. And yes, weight gain can be a side effect of insulin, but every single person is unique. Every diabetic is different. So you have super thin diabetics, super overweight diabetics. There's plenty who have a healthy weight. I don't think this should be something that's even discussed as a correlation here.
Definitely not. I think that there's lots of diabetics who are super healthy weight, both type 1 and type 2. There's just really no good way to ever judge if someone's going to be diabetic, going to become diabetic, or is diabetic based on their weight.
Moving forward to whatever myth number comes next, we want to talk about the idea that diabetes is preventable. I think it's super important that we acknowledge this myth because, like I've said a million times before, there's a lot of self-blame that comes with diabetes, and I think this myth only adds to that.
I hear this a lot. It's more for type 2 than type 1 diabetes, for sure. And it's actually something that's super commonly talked about in the medical community, where type 2 diabetes is preventable, is reversible. And I just need to say this for anyone who's listening, that there actually isn't a lot of surefire or like super strong evidence that it is completely preventable or completely reversible. Just because we can do some things to reduce our risk, it doesn't reduce our entire risk. When we think about lifestyle choices, I think we have to think about what two people can do that's the same that leads to different outcomes. I always try to give the example that you can have two identical people who have different genetics, who make the exact same lifestyle choices. They eat the same foods, they exercise the same, they have the same job, and one can end up with diabetes and the other one doesn't, simply because of genetics. And so because of this genetic component, we can't say that it's completely preventable. And the reason that I say this so, I don't know, assuredly, is because when I was first diagnosed, they thought I was type 2, and I really felt that self-blame. And so I really, my whole goal was to look into what the current science was on sort of early onset type 2 diabetes. And what I found was that earlier onset type 2 diabetes was harder to treat. It was more likely to end up on insulin therapy. You're more likely to end up with more complications from it. And all this really highlighted for me is the fact that it's obviously not preventable or reversible in everyone. I just think it's really important that we don't look at type 2 diabetes as being preventable, because what that does is it really does put blame on the patient. And I'm sure most type 2 diabetics have heard something around self-blame. And I know was part of my concern when I was diagnosed type 2 was that I had done something wrong. I had done something to myself. And type 1s we don't have that same theory behind it, right? We sort of understand that it's this autoimmune response that we're just genetically predisposed to. And I don't know why it's so hard to understand the same thing for type 2, but it's definitely not preventable. And type 1 is certainly not preventable. There is no good evidence that it is.
Yeah, and I think that there's also this belief that if a parent or some kind of relative has diabetes, that you're guaranteed as their child or grandchild to have it. But that's not the case. I'm one of three, and my two siblings don't have diabetes. So I guess you could call me the lucky one.
Absolutely. And it's something that I hear on Facebook and Beyond Type 1 fairly often. Are my kids going to get this? Is a really common question. And the answer is that there is an increased risk of passing it on, which Gianna, you can attest to, right? Like you're one of three siblings and you got diabetes from your dad, almost guaranteed. Thanks, Dad, right?
Yes, I will carry this special gift with me forever.
But it's not a guarantee, right? Your other two siblings are healthy and not diabetic. And so it's definitely not that just because your parent or sibling or close relative has diabetes, it doesn't guarantee that you're going to develop it for type 1 or type 2. Another thing that comes up, especially when we're talking in classrooms or with kids, so any parents of diabetics or teachers, diabetes isn't contagious. And as adults, I feel like we sort of inherently know this. It sounds ridiculous, but it's not. It's really important that we talk to kids especially, but everybody, about how you can't catch diabetes. There isn't any contagiousness to it. It's not bloodborne. It's not airborne. We're just born with it. Sorry. But for kids, especially in schools, I think that they can worry about catching it from their classmates, and that can sort of just lead to more social isolation and things that aren't really necessary when you can sort of just have those conversations with kids ahead of time, and it makes it all way better.
I definitely think that diabetes basic should be something that's gone over everywhere, but especially if there's a diabetic in your class, I think that teachers should make time during either syllabus week or icebreakers, make time to go over any kind of condition that someone has in the class. Obviously, check with them first. Maybe they want to keep it private. But I know for me personally, I wish my class knew what was going on with my diabetes, because I cannot explain how uncomfortable I would feel when I had to take out a snack in the middle of class and just start eating. To everyone else, it probably came off as pretty careless. Like, oh, she's eating breakfast in the middle of class. What is going on? But I was having a low blood sugar. Or when my insulin pump goes off and my teacher knows, oh, she's taking care of her diabetes, the rest of the class thinks that I'm holding a cell phone under the table, or that even with my insulin pump in hand, it looks like a phone. So I just wish these were things that were talked about more often. And I think it would just create a better understanding. These myths would be gone if we were taught them at a young age. But obviously now for someone my age, it's too late. I would still really appreciate if the people in my workspace had that communicated to them. So it doesn't just stay at HR. It goes to each manager that sees me. So I'm not responsible once I file for that accommodation for having to explain it to every single person, because I don't want to go over it a million times. And personally, I think the point of the accommodation is for me to be able to use those things at work without having to keep saying, yes, I'm a diabetic. Yes, I need to do this. These things should be learned about earlier. And that's my TED talk.
I think that that's a really common problem in school, and something that, like, I'm going to have to work on doing, because I'm going to have to tell every new supervisor I have, whether that's two a day or one a day or one a week, that I have diabetes and this is what might happen and this is why I'm doing this, and that it isn't that I don't care or that I'm uninterested or that I don't value the opportunity, but that it's just better for me and my patients and my health. And so it's something that is uncomfortable and I don't think everyone should have to do. But unfortunately, we don't live in a world where I can just say, hey, I have to step out right now. That's not acceptable enough. So I do have to give a bit of a caveat with it.
Yeah, it can be annoying.
The next myth, which is something that I've actually heard, again, from healthcare providers, but more in a historical sense, but I think it's still important to bring up, because whenever you hear these myths, you know that they're being passed around to people. This one is, and I do still hear about this on Facebook as well, but this idea that because you have diabetes, you're not going to be able to have kids or get pregnant without losing your eyesight or your kidney function or having complications or sort of making these ultimate sacrifices. And I have to say that this used to be true to an extent, that there was this really quite increased risk if women were type 1 diabetic, especially not well controlled before getting pregnant. But now, with our ability to test A1Cs, our ability to use a continuous glucose monitor, the insulins that we use are much better than they used to be. Moms on Facebook are just the best. They're super vocal with anybody who's wondering, whether it's a potential dad or a potential mom. They're just like, I had healthy kids. I was type 1 diabetic. It's hard, but it's manageable and you can do it. I'm healthy and my kids are healthy and I didn't lose my eyesight. I didn't run into any of these complications. Any pregnant type 1 will tell you that, you know, your insulin needs change and you sort of have all these new problems, that you can absolutely have a healthy pregnancy for you and your baby, even if you're type 1 or type 2 diabetic.
Yeah, growing up with poorly managed diabetes, I grew up hearing my doctor say, if you keep living your life this way, you are going to go blind, you are going to lose your legs, you are going to have kidney failure, and you're going to die a lot faster than you should. And I also watched other people in my life with diabetes get older, suffer complications from it, lose their leg, and within a year, they passed away. And it was really scary to watch. I'm not going to sugarcoat this. I am still terrified of losing a leg to diabetes or having any complications later on, because I can tell you right now, from how I took care of my diabetes as a child, it's harder for me to feel when my sugars are low or high right now. Don't get me wrong, it's still painful and I still do experience the symptoms, but it takes a lot more. So I don't feel my lows at, say, 70 or 80 anymore. I feel my lows when they're down to 40 or so. And my highs don't hit me until later on too, most of the time. And this is because my body got accustomed to these numbers because I was always sitting in them when I was younger. So when it comes to this, I use these fears now as motivators. I want to live for as long as possible. I want to be able to do a lot of things. So I'm trying to live a life as healthy as possible. And whenever I feel like not caring about my diabetes again, I hear this voice in the back of my head reminding me of where I could end up later in life. And it kicks me into gear. So I don't think this works for everyone, but it's something that works for me. Every step I take forward with my diabetes brings me a step further away from all these things that we just talked about.
Totally. And I think that that's something that's really important to mention. I had that said to me by a diabetic nurse when I was diagnosed, or before I was diagnosed, I don't know. And she said, the complications of well-controlled diabetes are nothing. And that really hit me, because you can't prevent everything. And there's obviously things that are going to happen to all of us that are complications from diabetes or complications from living life. But when you have well-managed diabetes, you put yourself almost in the normal category for your health status. And that's really powerful when, I think, especially when you hear all the time, like, oh, you're going to lose your eyesight, you're going to lose your legs, you're going to end up on dialysis with kidney failure, things like that, that are absolutely really real complications for people who have diabetes, but they're not a guarantee. And I think that it's good to be motivated, because, I mean, and I guess this is, they are a guarantee. If you have really poorly controlled sugars for decades on end, it's almost guaranteed that you're going to end up with some form of damage to your eyes, kidneys, and feet. But if you don't, it's really preventable. Check your feet. Every diabetic needs to check their feet, hopefully every day, especially if they don't hurt. And see your eye doctor, because that's another big thing, is getting your eyes looked at. Your eyes are the earliest sign that you're sort of starting to have some of those problems. So making sure that you're staying up to date with those optometrist appointments is really important too. Okay, I'm off my soapbox.
On to the next one. I talk a lot about how much my Dexcom helps me and how grateful I am to be able to have an insulin pump, stuff like that. And I find it super interesting how far we've come since I was diagnosed with diabetes in terms of diabetic technology and its capabilities. At the same time, I do not like when people say that technology is an end-all be-all for diabetics. It does not replace the insulin producing functions of my pancreas. It does not replace what I have to do in terms of rationing out my food, finding out how much carbs are in something if it doesn't have a nutrition label or a barcode on it. And they break a lot. I cannot tell you how many times my Dexcom hasn't calibrated right, or how many times my insulin pump doesn't work. I have problems with my Omnipod all the time. And the problem with having pump problems is that they take a while to spot, and you don't want to take it off because they're expensive. So something that happens constantly for me is that I wear my insulin pump on my back. Some people like to wear it on their stomach. For me, that doesn't work. It's uncomfortable. I like to wear high-waisted pants, so it gets in the way, and it just isn't a spot I can keep it. I tried my arms, but it falls off constantly. Same with my legs. So my back is the spot that works for me. And normally as a diabetic, you rotate your sites. But for me, I've run out of spots. I've had my insulin pump for a few years now. And every so often I'll find myself putting my insulin pump somewhere, thinking it's okay. But the problem is that the site's been used so much that my body doesn't absorb as much insulin there anymore. And I don't find out for a couple hours. When I see my sugar's high, I correct. Comes down a little bit because I'm not eating. I think I'm good, and then I find out a few more hours later it's still high. This actually happens way more frequently than you'd think, and it's a pain. So technology doesn't do it all for us. We definitely have a lot of stuff we still have to do as diabetics to take care of ourselves.
They're never going to be for everyone, and they're never going to solve all of the problems. We still have to actively manage all day, every day. So even if you're using one of those looped systems, it's not perfect. Like, I know for me, I have different basal rates all day. I have different carb ratios morning to night, and I change my basal throughout the month depending on my cycle. That's a lot for me to manage that my pump absolutely helps me with and makes that possible, but it doesn't solve all the problems. I know even people who use multiple daily injections of insulin with needles, sometimes like you do your injection and then you pull it out and you watch insulin come out, or you watch blood come out and you can smell the insulin and you're like, oh no, how much went in?
Yes, it's definitely important that it's recognized that these are things that help us manage our diabetes, but they are not substitutes for us.
Exactly. I'm so grateful to have this technology and have access to this technology, but it's not a given that everyone will. It's expensive. And I think a lot of diabetics can't afford it. And so they're just sort of missing out on this technology that could help. And definitely device failures are really annoying.
For sure.
Along with that, I hear a lot, especially type 2 diabetics, that they barely should be monitoring their sugar levels. They don't need to be monitoring them if they don't feel weird. I get this with my CGM all of the time. I've had to explain to everyone at the university, even though I have my CGM, I still have to check my sugar. I cannot necessarily, especially on my first day, like those first 24 hours, I cannot trust my CGM. I think that that's something that's really important to explain to people is it's not just if I feel weird, but it's before I eat. It's if I want to give insulin. It's if I'm leaving the house. We need to be checking our sugars basically all day.
This is one I've gotten a lot too, even from my friends. People think it's weird when you're testing, but you feel great. It's just something you have to be proactive about. Test, test, test. You're not only testing when you feel high or low. You're looking at your sugars all the time as a diabetic. And I think the idea that things aren't so black and white in diabetes is actually a good segue into our next myth, which is that you'll know that someone is experiencing diabetic shock because they'll pass out. And I can tell you that I learned this the hard way when I went into diabetic shock and I was fully conscious talking to people, but I blacked out and don't remember any of it. And I've also had instances where I was high, I was responsive, again, I could talk to people, but I was throwing up and I had high levels of ketones. Both times, I think that the people around me, obviously they know there's a problem and they're trying to do what they can, but I don't think their first instinct would be to call an ambulance because they're waiting for me to pass out. To them, that's the red flag to look for. And for years, I thought the same thing, but now I realize how important it is to know and be able to distinguish a drunk person from a person with low blood sugar, someone who's sick to someone with high blood sugar. Just know what to look for when people are experiencing diabetic shock. So try to control it before it gets to that point if possible.
Yes, yes, a million times yes. If you're diabetic and you're throwing up and you have ketones and your sugars are high, please go to the doctor, to emergency or an urgent care and get checked out. It's way better if you can address it ahead of time. Okay, here's one of my biggest pet peeves. And again, this is never, please ask any questions. Always ask questions. But please, the myth that diabetics can't eat something, especially sugar, because there's a lot of times where we need to eat sugar, or that we're diabetics so we can eat whatever we want as long as we give insulin. Neither of these are true. We're really just normal people who should eat healthy. But just like you can, we can decide to eat unhealthy and make our own choices. I think all that really needs to be said for this particular myth is just you wouldn't want somebody commenting on your food choices or hearing somebody say, oh, you're on this diet, you can't have dessert. So just don't, like, sort of manners. Don't comment on what people eat. And do trust that we hear a lot about what we eat from other people, and we just don't need it from you too.
Yep, I get this one the most, I would say, and I hate this one the most. I briefly touched on it in the last episode, talking about how when someone points out what I can and can't eat in their eyes, it makes me feel like all they're seeing when they look at me is my diabetes, and they're making all these judgments about all of my actions, knowing that I'm dealing with this condition at the same time. I don't like it. I think it's rude. I'm not here to teach you simple manners. Just don't make a comment about it. I know a lot of people make jokes about this one, but super uncomfortable. I would just stay away from it. Even if you mean well and you think you're doing what's right, leave it to the doctors. They can more than handle it. Speaking of things you shouldn't tell a diabetic how to do, let's talk about carb counting and the myth that is, I count sugar, not carbs. I get this a lot from my friends. I also hear it from my family. When I'm reading a nutrition label, they try to help me by reading me what I need to count. And oftentimes they read the sugar section instead of the carbohydrate section. And as a diabetic, we're always counting carbs, not sugar, because the sugar doesn't include all of it. I totally understand the confusion here. It's just irritating when I try to explain it and people don't seem to believe me or want to listen.
So, a little nutrition lesson. Carbs turn into sugar, and almost all carbs turn into sugar. And so what you're looking at when you're looking at the carbohydrates is you're looking at a combination of starch, fiber, and sugar, to just keep it super simple. And so the sugar is only the true sugar that's in something. So a potato will have a lot of carbs. Talk to any diabetic, we know this, but it doesn't actually have that much sugar in it. But the starch turns into sugar when we eat it, and we need to cover that sugar with our insulin. And for me, as a newly diagnosed diabetic, because my pancreas is still kind of like sputtering a little bit, I take fiber off my carb count because I don't need to cover it. But I know a lot of diabetics just use the total carbs flat out. So I think it just is really what works best for you. But it's never just sugar.
Yeah, and like I was saying before, I don't mind when someone offers to help me with carb counting. I think that's really nice. I super appreciate that. Or if they ask a question about how I carb count, I think that's cool too. But when you're telling me how to carb count, when you're telling someone who's been living with this X amount of years how to do something, it just, well, I mean, let's look at how my carb counting is going. Maybe I shouldn't be saying anything. But really, you don't need to tell a diabetic how to carb count. Trust that their doctor has educated them enough to know how to carb count.
I think something else that I've seen a lot lately in the type 1 diabetic circles on, again, Beyond Type 1 and Facebook are the two big ones, is that type 1 diabetics are more likely to have milder versions of COVID-19. And right now, obviously, COVID-19 is just going rampant in the States and even across Canada. And it's scary to think about, but I think it's really, really important that we know that there isn't any actually good data that is at all reliable enough to say that diabetics or type 1 diabetics get milder COVID. Everything that I've read has sort of a theoretical perspective that makes sense, which is that our immune systems are sort of hyperactive and so they're better at battling things, but that just doesn't seem to be the case in reality. And I know that there are quite a few studies that have come out of England that show that type 1 diabetics are more likely to die from COVID. And so I just think that it's right now we need to, as the diabetic community, treat ourselves like we are in that higher but not super high risk for COVID complications and just treat ourselves accordingly. Now, I also want to say that another myth that comes up often is that we're more likely to get sick from COVID or from other things. And that's not really the case either unless you're poorly controlled. The more poorly controlled your sugars are, the worse your immune system works. But as long as you're a well-controlled diabetic, you're really quite close to that sort of normal functioning immune system for the most part. I think while it's important to sort of maintain precautions, we need to wear masks and socially distance and do all of those things to help protect others and keep ourselves safe, wash our hands a lot. I don't think we need to get super scared about COVID and that kind of thing as type 1 diabetics either. I think that there's sort of a healthy balance we can find.
Yeah, I'm really lucky to say I have very kind people in my life. A lot have reached out to me in regards to my diabetes and COVID, checking in on me. The issue is not that I'm more likely to catch COVID than your average person. It's that my body is going to need to work a lot harder to fight it off. Just be proactive about it. Protect yourself. Please wear a mask. Please wash your hands. Do whatever you can to put yourself in the safest scenario.
Definitely. And I think you bring up a good point that if we do get sick or when we do get sick with an illness, the problem is that our sugars go high. So any normal person's sugars go up when they're sick as well. But especially in type 1, we develop this just huge hormonal response that causes insulin resistance and all sorts of stuff. So it actually can cause DKA to set in. So diabetic ketoacidosis, where your sugars go so high and they're not responding to insulin. And so it's really important when we're sick with anything, but especially COVID, because it is shown to have a really crazy effect on sugars, even in healthy people. It's really important to stay on top of your sugar levels, to test for ketones, drink lots of water, and go into an emergency if you're worried.
Moving on to our next myth, people with diabetes can't donate blood. Now, this was a tricky one because when I first read this, I was so confused as to who would say this and why they would say it, because I've donated blood many times through my life, all of them being after I had diabetes. So I sent this to Victoria and kind of laughed about it, which is when she told me that people living in Canada with type 1 diabetes can't donate blood. They're legally not allowed to.
But it's true. So type 1 diabetics and almost all other major autoimmune diseases automatically disqualify you in Canada from donating blood. This was a fun conversation that we got to have. We both learned something because I can't donate blood. I was an avid blood donor before I developed my first autoimmune disease in 2015. And since then, I haven't been able to donate at all. It's really disappointing from my perspective because it's something that I enjoyed doing, feeling like I was giving back to the community. I don't know the reasons why type 1 diabetics can't donate blood in Canada, but can in other places.
Yeah, I don't really understand that one either, especially when people need blood. I do want to mention, though, I didn't check the rules for other states, so I just know that this is true for New Jersey. I don't know about the other 49 states. Maybe you can some.
And I did sadly double check on the Canadian Blood Services and confirm that I cannot, as a type 1 diabetic, donate blood. So I think we're almost to the end of our myths. So our next myth is that diabetes can be cured with blank. And that blank can be filled with anything, but some of my favorites are cinnamon and bitter melon and turmeric and, oh, I'm sure there's lots of others. I'm sure that we could meditate it away if we tried really hard. But I think like every day on Insta, whenever we post anything, we get these terrible comments from people who are like, oh, this natural herb or this natural remedy or this natural doctor cured my diabetes. And it drives me crazy because it's really taking advantage of people who may not know any better. There isn't a cure for type 1 diabetes right now. There just isn't. There isn't an easy fix. The easiest fix for type 1 diabetes is insulin, and that's what we use.
Yes, 100%. Insulin is not a cure to diabetes. It is something that helps us manage it. It is something we need to stay alive, and it is something we need to live a happy and healthy life with diabetes. I have met someone who told me they had a daughter who had diabetes, and they didn't give her insulin, and they said that they refused to give her insulin because she didn't need it. And that since I go to school, I should know better than to think that a diabetic's life depends on insulin. You know, I've never met this person's daughter. I don't know how she's doing, but I can't imagine she's going to have a very long life if she truly is diabetic and doesn't have access to insulin. And I do want to mention that I am totally open to different opinions, different perspectives. If you disagree with me, please share your side with me. I'd love to hear it. But when it comes to this, I draw the line. I delete any comments that say blank cured my diabetes, just because I find that to be so dangerous to people, like Victoria said, who might not know that that's not true. And I don't want to be responsible for putting someone's life in jeopardy because they believed your comment.
That's terrifying. I know how awful I felt before I was on insulin, and I don't think insulin should be something that people don't think of as the only treatment for type 1 diabetes right now. It's all we have. It's the best thing we have. Obviously, we complain, and it's not the safest drug, and it's not the easiest to administer. And it's one of the only drugs where you have to make dosing decisions every single day that are different.
Yeah, figuring out how much insulin to take on a daily basis really sucks. But we are so grateful to have that opportunity and to have a type of condition where we can just take something and be able to manage it rather than have no option whatsoever to live a life where we can do what we want to do. And I think that'll actually move us into our very last myth, which is that diabetics can't do blank.
Yeah, I just saw a post recently on Facebook where a mom was asking, you know, for her son, like, what kinds of things can my son do as a type 1 diabetic? And most of the responses were so lovely. I think that they really sort of hit the nail on the head that you can just do anything you want with diabetes. And like, obviously, I'm in medical school becoming a doctor, and that's going to happen. And so, you know, I'm going to join one of many diabetic doctors in the field. And I always have to put in a plug because I think, especially as diabetics, we are patients, and we see a lot of practitioners who don't have experience with diabetes, who don't know what we're going through. And so if you have diabetes and want to get into the healthcare field, never feel like you can't because of your diabetes. It's absolutely possible. Send us a message on Insta. It's totally possible. You can do anything you want with diabetes. It doesn't mean that you don't have to work a little bit harder and manage things closely. Obviously, I have to be a safe doctor first, but it's absolutely possible.
Yeah, seriously, please DM us if you have any kind of future that you think maybe I can't do this because I have diabetes, or you feel like it limits you in some amount of way. Let us know what it is, and I will do whatever is possible to help you achieve that future, because really, diabetes should not be holding you back from anything.
Definitely. I think reaching out within the diabetic community is always really fruitful, because even if the person you're talking to doesn't know exactly how to get you where you want to go, they'll be able to match you up with someone who does. Everyone knows diabetics who are doctors, who are lawyers, who are whatever. And if that's something you're interested in and worried about, I think that there's always someone, especially a type 1 diabetic, who's willing to talk to you, or any diabetic. I think that there's always a lot of support available out there. And of course, we just have to talk about this, right? How you need a good support system as a diabetic.
It wouldn't be a T1 Talks episode if we didn't talk about a support system at least once.
So I think that wraps up our myths for today. But if you guys think of any that we missed or any that you relate to, feel free to leave a comment or send us a DM at our Instagram at T1 Talks.
And now for our goals. Last week, I talked about adding more fun into my week. I wanted something to do to take away from the stress, and I think I did a pretty good job of that. I started a new woodworking project, which I'd really missed since finishing my thesis project. I started sneaking some reading into every day, played some online games with my sister, It was just a nice break from the constant go, go, go.
That sounds awesome. What is your new woodworking project?
So I don't know if you've seen Pixar's Up, but I went online and found someone making the house from Up, obviously small scale, and they made it out of cardboard. And I thought that was super interesting, but I wanted to try making it out of wood. So I'm using the measurements that they provided and what they used for the cardboard. And now I'm trying to make it out of wood.
I've definitely seen that movie. That sounds awesome. You'll have to show me how it goes and show everyone, I guess.
If it doesn't look like garbage, I will definitely be posting it on our Instagram page.
Okay, even if it does, that's okay. It's a learning experience.
You're right, you're right.
And self-care, remember?
Yes, it has definitely been fun. So I have that much for sure.
So what are you planning to do for this week?
I am taking on the leadership board for Happy Bob. I was so close last week. I know I sent it to you, Victoria, but my pump broke. I had high sugars the rest of the night, and unfortunately, I didn't make it. I don't care, though. I'm doing it this week. It's gonna happen.
It's so hard, especially with those device malfunctions that really you have no control over. I know my phone died this week and I lost a ton of stars. Or anytime I have to turn it off for like an exam or anything like that, I always lose those stars and it makes me bitter. I don't know when the last time I was on the leaderboard. I've been having higher than average sugars for me. So I cheer you on. You got this.
Thanks. Yeah, some of these numbers, I'm like, dang, these diabetics are good. How about you? How'd your goals go last week?
Well, last week, my goal was to keep up trying to walk well, keeping up things with school and work and clinical and all of that. And I might have accidentally spoiled this on my personal Instagram account last night. Whoops. But I've been walking just as much and maybe even more since being back this week. And so that's been really nice. Like we've been working up the amount that we're walking as well as the speed that we're walking, and it's feeling really good. And I'm really feeling my body is feeling better since I'm moving all the time, and that feels so good. So I'm really enjoying it.
That's awesome. I'm really proud of you.
And then this week, my goal is to start a new novel, which I have sitting on my desk, or a new podcast, which I have sitting in my to listen list. So I have huge lists for both. And right now, I feel like even with walking, I'm still stressing out a lot. And any spare time I have is just spent worrying. And so, especially with final exams coming up in the next week, which should have happened in May pre-COVID times, I'm finding like my anxiety is crazy. So I'm excited to sort of hopefully detach from that a little bit into some books or podcasts.
I think that is the best goal you could have picked for finals week. I know how stressful that can be. And I can tell you that last week showed me how important it is to take some time off for yourself and enjoy life. Always fit time in for what makes you happiest.
Totally. So needed.
I swear, guys, I'm not usually this preachy. This podcast just makes me really happy. Anyways, we'll be back next week with an episode on what a day in the life of a diabetic includes.
All right, and we'll catch you next time.